The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I'm hopeful, regardless of the outcome. Boost up positive energy without one. Sorry about the jab, I'm on a holy field. I'm bearing fruit, but demons try to eat them like Yoshi meal. I piss them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers, eating fresh rolls.
Oh yeah, welcome to the bonus episode of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for permaculture is my passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living, and sometimes even, as of late, even the paranormal. But hey, on Wild Wednesday, you know what? I always find somebody I think is absolutely interesting. It's not always going to be in farming necessarily, but today it just happens to be. But she is an extraordinary, interesting, just a wonderful person inside and out, and I can't wait for y'all to meet her. But before we do that, this episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from TwoOldCrowsHomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Also, our new one out there, y'all, GreenwayFilters.com. Look, I've been a journeyman, wireman, or electrician, as you may call it, for 27 years. 5% off with their discount. Look, one of the worst things you have going on right now is that dirty power coming into your home. And they sell the way to test it, and they sell the ways to mitigate it, and they do it at a better price, and it gets it done better than anybody else on the market. You know why? Because I've been out there testing this stuff because we've been getting Kentucky fried up in Billy's Jungle Palace of Love forever and a day, and finally I've gotten to the point where I fixed all that. Anyway, I found somebody, a partner, and once again, there is not one single advertiser on this show that has reached out to me. In every case, I've reached out to them because they got a product worth reaching out for. So 5% discount with promo code PERMA. Also, my dogs right now, my feet are sitting right now on this grounding mat from RedemptionShield.com. Get yourself 10% off with, once again, discount code PERMA. Look, all the crazy things going on here. Look, I'm in a broadcast studio right now. I'm being Kentucky fried in every angle. But guess what? When you're being constantly grounded, it doesn't stay with you. It's going straight down to that grounding mat into the ground. And, you know, that's how I'm able to stay lucid during these interviews. Well, I guess that's up for debate sometimes. But anyway, my last one, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. And once again, y'all, they are the best in the market. EMP Shield did not reach out to me. I reached out to them because they sell without a doubt the best in the market. Look, things jump off. You're not looking to go to the club. You're looking to get to your bug out place, or you're looking to get to your house. That's for the devices they sell for vehicles. But the one they have for your house, it'll also handle multiple EMPs should you require it, especially if it's a localized event. Everything is not going to get Kentucky fried downstream because it all shunts to ground, and it does it at, you know, faster than light speed practically. And here's the cool thing about it. Your biggest threat for your home is not necessarily an EMP. It's lightning. And if anything gets past EMP Shield and Kentucky fries anything downstream from it, they're going to cover you for 25 G's. Yeah, find me somebody else in the business that does that. You ain't going to find it. So anyway, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. And with all the housekeeping out of the way, y'all, just want to kind of lead into my next guest here. Now, her name is Judith, and I met her a little while ago at the East Tennessee Homestead Alliance, and she and I were sharing a stage, and I was thoroughly impressed, not only with everything she was saying. Look, y'all, I live in kind of a bubble out here. I don't get out much, and I really don't get out much at all. And when I do, and then I have the opportunity to meet people that are doing extraordinary things, very, very selfless people, people that are out there trying to evangelize their own brand of permaculture or their own thing that they find passionate or that they're passionate about. Look, that is one of the beauties of going to a thing like this. That's exactly why I'm so excited about what we have coming up at Homesteaders United Jamboree on August 29th through 31st. I'm going to be there, and a lot of you guys are going to be there as well. But you know what? If you want to run into people that are going to be similar to Judith, now there's only one Judith out there. And if you want to run into people that, I mean, she's wicked smart, she's considerate, and she's an extraordinary podcaster, and we'll get into that in a minute. But y'all, I really want to introduce you to her, and I couldn't wait to get her on the show, despite how busy I am. I mean, I am busy 30 ways to Sunday, but I am always going to find time to make room for people like her because she is doing extraordinary things, and she's evangelizing some incredible things. So we're going to get into what she's doing, and you got to check out her Ballin' podcast. So with that said, Judith from Fair Hill Farm, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. Billy, I'm so pleased to be here.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
flubbed right out of the gate. Sure, why not?
No, it's all good. I guess all of us look the same. It's all... No, I'm kidding.
No, oh, what? No, you did not. You did not.
No, I did. No. And don't worry, the audience in this, believe me, I've said much worse than that. So you run a farm and you run a podcast and you do a lot of awesome stuff. So you know what, Judith? Every superhero out there has an origin story. Before we get into it, you know, everybody likes to know a little bit of something about the person they're about to talk or I'm about to talk to. So why don't you tell us about your life? I mean, take as long as you need, and we'll get into the meat and potatoes here in a little bit.
Yeah. So my origin story started back in 08, actually, during the Great Recession. And I was living in suburbia, living the dream with my husband and kids, and my kids had massive food allergies. And after doing extensive testing, came to find out that they weren't allergic to food at all. They were allergic to the stuff that our current factory food system puts into food. And in frustration and trying to get them some clean food, I ended up learning more about how our food is produced, I had to take a class to learn how to read labels. And that was eye-opening in itself that I needed to do that to build myself a decoder ring, really, which is ridiculous. And I ended up going a little bit crazy and I ripped up my backyard and I turned it into a small organic farm in suburbia, complete with fruit trees and backyard hens for non-GMO fed hens. And after I had been at it for a couple of years, come to find out that there were deed restrictions in our neighborhood, which we did not know about when we moved in. And I found myself on the wrong end of the law and I was busted for illegal backyard chickens.
Hold on. Wait. Yeah. Okay. I know there's more to this story, but I got to stop you right there.
Yeah.
So I guess you were in an HOA and somebody turned you in and, so you didn't tell them your chickens identify as dogs, I take it?
Waterfowl was not illegal. So I really tried to figure out how I could walk that line. But I wish that had been back in the days when I could have said that they identify as waterfowl or something like that. That would have been
somebody great. Dimed you out?
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Yep. Sure. I mean, I had to stop right there. In the pantheon of things, yeah, people could do so wrong. Wow, you're real Jesse James type out there, I can tell.
So we got in trouble, and we were told you're going to be in big trouble because in the state of Ohio, they saw fit to pass a law that said that homeowners association laws can be enforced by police, not just the homeowners association. So just to give a little bit of background to people who are listening, so I decided that wasn't worth it. And my immediate neighbors were not the ones who turned me in. They actually were very upset too and went to several meetings, tried to appeal, tried to get the rules changed, completely overruled by people who I didn't even know in the back of the neighborhood. It was such a circus. And so I butchered my chickens in the front yard in protest. We put up our house for sale and moved to a farm.
Hold on. You did it in the front yard.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. I did it in the front yard. Not my proudest moment, but now I can talk about it.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now that is some Jesse James stuff right there. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah. Now we gotta pause for a moment there before we make the transition. Now, walk me through that day and what was it like for the people?
So we were the second house in on a development that had about 250 homes in it. And because of the geography, there was only one road in and one road out. And I started first thing in the morning and everyone had to drive past it. I got a lot of strange looks. I didn't get the police called on me, but I was out there with my knife and blood bucket and the table, and the chickens were I hung them from a tree instead, you know, not like a killing cone or anything. I did it from a tree and I did it humanely. I knew how to do it. I knew how to dispatch them and everything, but I was not discreet.
Oh my goodness. Now, did that create quite the roar in here? I'm taking this as that kind of, it sounds like this is that kind of neighborhood where there you had some of the stick your pinky up kind of neighbors where, these people had to be appalled.
They probably were, but I didn't hear anything about it later. No one said a peep to me. Maybe they didn't want to. I'm not sure. I think it was just I guess they were going to take their victory knowing that those terrible chickens were gone. It was six hens, by the way. And they were in a darling little coop in the backyard. They were only free during the day when I was at home. They weren't running amok and pooping on people's porches or anything. No. And it was in the yard, had a fence around it. They were contained. Our backyard backed up to woods. I mean, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. It was just it was just enforcing the rules because they were enforcing the rules. And I just tell people, you know, be careful what you sign up for when you're living in neighborhoods. Because when we bought this house, on our disclosure document, it said that there was no homeowners association.
Oh, really?
So we believed it. We believed it. But note to the wise, safety tip, folks, the disclosure document can be full of lies and it can be full of things that are just plain wrong. And there isn't jack you can do about it. And then you have to live with the consequences. Also not allowed to have solar panels on top of the house. Also not allowed to have a clothesline. Yeah, there was a lot of stipulations that after living there for 5 years, suddenly, boom, we had all these restrictions. It was very surprising to me.
Wow. So they backdoored a lot of this stuff, but I'm just imagining right now, they're probably thinking, okay, you know what? I mean, you're out there, they're probably thinking you're either doing some kind of voodoo ritual or, you know, you're coming down after them, you know, as soon as you're done with these chickens. But no, as you were. So that gave you the impetus. I guess at that point, you and your husband and your family said, okay, it's time to raise up out of here. So walk me through that.
Yeah. So my husband and I kind of looked at each other, and this was before I butchered the chickens. We looked at each other and we decided that this was not a phase. And we decided to double down. Now, it was my choice to butcher the chickens after he went to work that morning. So he was not privy to that particular bit of rebellion. But for the rest of it, we were definitely on board and of the same mind where he said, bag this, we're leaving suburbia. And there had been a lot of other things that had happened in the neighborhood. And we just decided we wanted to leave. So we saved our pennies and we started looking for a farm. And that was quite a lengthy process. It took 2 years for us to be able to find a piece of land that we could afford that was in the county that we wanted to live in and had all the things that we were looking for. And we were able to afford it because it was a complete mess and it needed so much work. And so when we moved in, is 19 acres in the same county, 19 acres, and it was in, you know, a certain distance from where my husband was working. So it was a long commute, but it was doable. And we had to start from scratch. There was not a single bush. There was not a single fruit tree. There was not a vegetable. There was not a flower. There was nothing there but a busted up barn with no front door, broken high tensile wire and front field that was 10 feet tall and brambles and acres of just debris. It was a complete mess. And it had been neglected and abused for a long time. But the location was amazing. The water was clean. A lot of different diversity in terms of soil. And it was a nice microclimate in a small valley. And the land was beautiful. And the surrounding area was good. And the city near us had a 10-year plan for economic development. And It was 8 miles away from the home. And we took a look at the progress and we saw that the leadership in that city was doing a good job. They're ahead of plan. They had a solid plan. It was working. And so we felt that from a monetary value standpoint, it was a good investment, but then physically it was the ideal place. And so we moved in and we just got to work and it was just work, 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 work.
Now, let me ask you, Judith, because yes. We are in what Joel calls a homesteading tsunami right now.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you, what year was this? Do you know thereabouts that you made this transition?
2013.
Okay. So that was 2013. So you're definitely a veteran at this point.
Yes.
For all those people that are getting into this, I definitely want to make that transition into all you're doing right now, but it is such a massive help to the new people that are getting into this space. Mm-hmm. Find out, when you got out there, did you feel like a pig on roller skates going into suburbia, into a place like this where you're on 19 acres? Did it feel overwhelming? How did you tackle it? What were some of the big mistakes you did? And if you had to do it over again, what would you do differently? I know that's a lot in there, but take whatever you like with it.
Yeah. So it was completely overwhelming. We had to purchase a tractor before we really knew exactly what we were going to be doing with the land. We were certainly not experienced with tractors. We didn't even know how to shop for one properly. For some crazy reason I had it in my mind, we didn't need to buy one. There was sticker shock. What brand? I mean, shopping for tractors was something. And then when the guy delivered it, he pulled it off the truck and he said, "Here you go," and handed me the keys. I'm like, I don't know how to drive this. What do I do? And he's like, "I'm the delivery guy, not your tractor coach."
Figure
it out. And then, got the manual like a nerd, right? Like a suburban nerd. I'm reading up on how to even do anything with the tractor. And the problem is that, as I found with just about everything farming related, these manuals are written expecting that you already know what you're dealing with before.
Yep.
Like you even got like there's it there. It doesn't start at step one. It starts at step 20. Like yep. It assumes you already know what you know before you even started. And that's a big flaw. So that's something that people should be prepared for. There's going to be stuff that gets delivered to you or handed to you or explained to you in a way where like the lingo is weird. I didn't know what a PTO was. I had never dealt with that. And what does power takeoff mean? And how, you know, I could go and walk in a yard at John Deere dealership or something like that, or a Kubota dealership, and look at the attachments, and they might as well have been from outer space. I had no idea what all these different implements and things. And then when someone say, "Oh, that's," I'm like, "What is that thing with the stuff that spins around?" And like, "Oh, that's a tedder." Well, what's a tedder? What's for tedding? What the heck? You know? So there's so much lingo that was a huge, huge learning curve. And that's been something that I have worked really hard to help people that I work with, to help them master some of that lingo and the terminology. That's a big piece of it. The next piece was wanting to do everything. Now, a lot of people move into land and they have the simultaneous blessing and curse of being able to immediately have all this infrastructure in place or these fields, these barns ready to go and everything. And so they can just fill it with animals and overdo it. And had I had that opportunity, I probably would have made that same mistake. But remember, my place was beat down. I had, you know, brambles 12 feet tall, saplings in my little pastures. There was even one pasture when we bush hogged it, we found a structure that we didn't even know was there when we bought the building.
Wow.
So, bought that property, right? So I didn't have the ability to do too much at once. So we just went for the basics. We knew chickens. So we got chickens. And then the next year we did turkeys. And then the next year we added to that. And so in order to keep ourselves from feeling overwhelmed and to keep ourselves on track, I made a rule, which happened to be like the world's most lucky, close your eyes, spin around and throw a dart and it hit a bullseye. And so here's what it was, folks. Only add one new species or level of complexity per year. That was my rule. And I have found it to be really good. So I'm going to give you an example of species. Well, you know what species is. I already explained that. But level of complexity. So 1 year we got sheep. We did not start breeding sheep until the following year. We did not get a breeding male for our goats until our second year of having goats. You know, so that's like another layer of complexity is managing a breeding male animal when it comes to ruminants. So the layers of complexity, and only add another layer after you've got the first layer down, optimized, you know how many minutes it takes, you know how much to expect, you got someone else who can do it in case you get the flu. That system is down, pat, running, timed, you know how much it costs, you know how much it brings in. Nothing's free. It always has an income stream. It's self-sustaining in some way. It's going to fit into the bigger picture. It meets your mission, and you know what you're going to do with extra animals. You know what levels you have to match as far as production costs versus income from it, sources for food, a veterinarian that can see them if you need to. You have the ability to handle the animal safely. Maybe you need handling equipment if it's a something bigger than a turkey, you know, maybe not for goats, but for sheep, you know, a lot of people need handling equipment. Can you handle it if you're the only person there? Can that be handed off in a simple way to a farm sitter? Stuff like that. So those are all things that need to be, it sounds nerdy, but it needs to be timed. It needs to be measured, and it needs to be optimized before you're ready for the next level. And then the next level or the next adjacent item should interlock with that first one. So chickens and garden obviously are going to interlock really well. I don't think that I should have put goats and sheep together, which I didn't. But if that was my choice, I think that would be an unwise choice, unless I was doing dairy goats with breeding sheep, in which case the extra milk is a backup maybe for lambs. But even so, that's not really good. So I would say if you've got goats, then maybe the next step should be a pig, because extra milk can go to the pig, right? So anyway, try to interlock things that way. So lingo, layers of complexity. The other thing is going to be getting to know the neighbors, making friends with them. Being Switzerland, don't take sides in any kind of turf wars or old, you know, grudges that are happening in your area, because you're the new guy on the block. So be friends to everybody and then draw your own conclusions and don't be judgmental. And I got judged hard because it was 2013 and no one had seen laying hens that laid green eggs. That was a weird thing. No one had seen Icelandic sheep because they had horns and they had long fur, and those were boutique sheep. So there was all kinds of funny things. What do you mean you don't raise beeves? You don't have hogs? You don't grow corn? What do? You call yourself a farmer? You know, I used to run into this stuff. Today I don't, but that's where I started. So beware that mindset and just try to say, yep, you know, I'm from suburbia, you know, carry on. And I found that the neighbors, the farming neighbors, they didn't really care how much I did or what I did or what I was doing or losing money or making money. They didn't care. They wanted to see that the land was being utilized and that it wasn't going to be a big lawn, because big lawns. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. Yeah. You may hear from mine as well, but yeah. As you will.
Yeah, a big lawn's away. So they want to make sure that it's getting, you know, they always say, well, what are you doing with the land? What are you growing? What are you raising? It's always about production, production, production. And what interlocks with that is asking these old timers, these older guys, these people who have been in farming their whole lives, ask them how they do stuff. Ask them for their advice. They love to give advice, because the problem that just about every farmer faces across the board is that they don't have someone to hand the stuff off to. They know that, I mean, only 1-2% of the population is in farming at all. So when someone else who's younger, I was the young kid and I was 42 at the time. I was the young kid on the block. All right. I'm 53 now, but I was 42 and I was a youngster. So these guys, these farming families, they want to help out. Even if you don't do things the same way, the world's different. They're much more accepting of it. And, you know, I really encourage people to seek their advice. Those are the big things that I did that I try to help people, you know, understand just from a bigger standpoint. And of course, you know, then the permaculture principles being, make sure you got closed loop systems, no waste, get a yield, You got to give back to the earth. It's, you know, all of the permaculture stuff. But socially, that's where I think people struggle first before you even get into the permaculture stuff. I mean, there's, you know, you need to make sure that you're going to be able to function in other ways.
Folks, as you can see, this was totally worth the price of admission just with hearing that alone. I'm telling you, Judith is sharp, and I know you guys got to be just, I mean, she's bringing up points that I never brought up on this program, and they are profound and important, and you can see out of the gates, she didn't make all the fundamental, I'm sure you got a whole list of mistakes.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
That you made that everybody, but collectively, everybody else that is getting into this space is doing the polar opposite. And by the way, I didn't know you and I were the same age. So,
yeah, we're 71 models.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. I had no idea.
Yep.
I thought I was much, much older, but,
No,
everybody thinks I'm in my 60s, but, no.
Farmer face. You look like you're 60 from the time you're 40 until the time you're 80. That's the farmer face. So it works to your advantage at, you know, later in life.
Well, you must be wearing a hat because it's clearly not affecting you. the bottom line is with all this that's going on, and so many people doing this, I mean, when you were back new to this environment, you didn't make those fundamental mistakes because everything you said there is the polar opposite of what we see. And I'm talking 99% of the people getting into this space did everything polar opposite from what you did. Yeah. So what critical mistakes did you make in the beginning that you wish, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, that maybe if you could go back, what were some of those mistakes do you think that hitting the ground running that maybe if you had it to do over again, you might have done differently?
I think I would have inspected my home better because when we discovered that, once again, we got screwed on the disclosure document. The previous owner lied about that. So I think if we had done a better job with inspecting the place, we would have known that there was more critical infrastructure things that were not properly functioning. And we would have been able to take that money that we would have otherwise spent and set it aside to make those improvements. So we ended up spending, you know, when you move to a new place, you kind of hold some money back because you know you're going to need to make improvements and do certain things. Well, we ended up spending it on things like stopping the water leak that was underground in the front yard because there was a busted water line because we didn't properly test a hydrant before we bought the house. Dumb stuff like that. What else? What else did we make a mistake? Oh, we made the mistake of thinking that fixes were going to be relatively easy. Like, oh, we'll just put a new barn door on and that'll be easy enough. Well, it's easy enough if you've done it before, but if you've never done it, try Googling how to build a barn door and then actually doing it without making 25 mistakes. So I guess the big mistake is underestimating the amount of effort and time and expense that something requires in order to get it to where you want it, based on your presuppositions. And 90% of the stuff is going to be stuff that, you know, you've never seen before or dealt with before. The other thing we underestimated was the impact of ground and aerial predators on our birds. Mm-hmm. We were very surprised that, I mean, we knew that there's going to be wild creatures out here. We didn't realize it was Wild Kingdom. We have bear, we have bobcat, we have hawks, we have this thing called a black vulture, which I had never heard of before 2013. And they do not just kill dead things. They kill live things and they will kill lambs. So, you know, the whole thing, having a predator mitigation strategy and understanding predators before you get into it is a big deal. So we needed to have a solution for a guardian, containment, and protection. That surprised us a little bit. Water was a big one. Water management. You know, you see stuff, it's dry, it looks good, it checks out. But then when the big rains come, what is actually going on? So learning how to read the signs of where water travels or go there when there's a really bad storm, just show up at this site or this home where you're going to be seeing that you're, you know, if you have the opportunity to see it during a rainy season or a very bad rainstorm or visit immediately afterwards. We didn't realize that the stream that was across the street from us would back up in the, we have springs We have seep springs at the bottom of our property. And so a lot of this water gets carried away under the road and goes into the stream on the opposite side of the road. We didn't realize that when the stream rose, it would back it up and it would completely flood our bottom pasture. So we had counted on that originally in our plan as being available for grazing. To find out, no, we probably shouldn't be making that available to grazing because those seep springs were going to be death traps for our animals. And then there's a chance of them being flooded out and maybe being drowned if there was a sudden flood. So the water is the other thing. And then the last thing was trees. We were very surprised with how much maintenance trees actually require. You know, you look out back and you think, oh, it's all tree covered hills. And it's kind of, it's like a, you know, only half of our land is pasture and, you know, kind of silvo and gardening area. The other half is all wooded hillsides. And we underestimated how much care it really takes to properly manage wooded hillsides. And you think, oh, it's wild. Just leave it. No maintenance. Wrong. Wrong. It needs management. It needs care. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of other problems. And we underestimated that as well.
Wow. You're pulling up some really, really great stuff. I got one more question before we move on to the other things you're doing. And the reason I'm asking all this, Judith, is because we do have, as you well know, a homesteading tsunami. People hitting me up all the time about how to get going, where to start. And honestly, an OG like yourself is sitting in here. I mean, you're knocking it so far out of the park. I don't need, as far as the do's and the don'ts and all these other things, like things as simple that people just kind of overlook, as I have before, as a disclosure agreement, which everybody lies about for some reason.
Yes.
And you wind up in there with some pretty big problems that are going to just chip away at the money you thought you had for other things. Let me ask you about this, because so many people, as we mentioned a moment ago, are, you know, drifting into this space. And the worse or crazier things get, the acceleration for these people into this diaspora seems to be happening. Now, let me ask you, there are record numbers that have gotten into this space, and there is such a thing as a permaculture or a farm divorce, where you have one spouse or the kids or whatever, only one of them is like, man, I really want to live this lifestyle, but everybody else goes kicking and scratching. How was the transition? And I hope this isn't too personal, but how was that transition? Was this primarily your decision, a family decision? And how did everybody adjust, the kids from going to suburbia to this, and maybe your husband, now he's got a different commute altogether, and you yourself? I mean, how did this transition work out?
Well, when we first moved here, we were both still full-time employed off farm. So that was something that we had. We had the same challenges. We had agreed that we were going to just swallow it and figure it out. And our kids were in their tweens. So they didn't really have a lot of input. Our son really didn't have much of an opinion. Our daughter was all gung-ho, like, yeah, going to farm. And my husband and I were both all in. Now, what I failed to plan for was what all in looks like when it comes to the willingness to accept. You know, you move into a house and certain things don't work properly, or you have to forego certain improvements because other things are falling down or there's another emergency. And so portions of your life when you first move in can be like glamping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah. So I think that having this idyllic picture of having less of a farm and more of an estate is what my husband had, you know, in his mind as far as having a farm. And of course I would love to have that too. It would look beautiful, but that isn't kind of the reality. And he didn't really grow up around farms, and I had visited enough farms, being around horses, you know, when I was growing up. I was not a farmer. I don't have a farming family, but I was around a lot of horse farms. And, you know, being around other horse farms and other people with other livestock, you kind of see that the barn needs paint, and, you know, there's nails sticking out of the fence boards, you know, and then there's going to be a hole under the fence, and then there's going to be where the chickens dug a hole and there's a dust bath, you know, and then you got the stray cats coming in, and, you know, there's always sort of that level of things that need to be fixed, that kind of base level of stuff that kind of needs attention, and it doesn't look like a little storybook. And I think one of the things that I discovered is that my tolerance for that less than perfect look was higher than my husband's. And so over the years, we've had to kind of negotiate and come to agreement with what is acceptable. And we had to find that middle ground. So he needed to learn how to accept that maybe that fencing wasn't as nice as the fencing that I had in mind, but it's what we can afford. And that's okay. As long as, you know, we keep it trimmed and it looks good and that's fine. And then I also had to learn that I needed to keep a little bit more on top of some of the aesthetics a little bit more. So then I'm all about necessity and function and less about aesthetics. And he's about, like, aesthetics is up there with function, I guess I should say. I shouldn't say he only cares what something looks like, because he doesn't. He cares that it's done well, but it also has to look good. So as a result, we have a rather nice looking farm.
There you go.
I'm going to tell you, it's only good, but it is an adjustment. But it's important to have those conversations and walk through other farms and say, what do you love about this? I mean, if I'd known then what I know now, I would have saved myself the 75 conversations and frustrations, and I would have walked through other farms that we looked at and said, what do you like about it? What do you not like about it? As opposed to going, oh, that's a cool idea, and going, yeah, that's cool. I would have gone at a different level. I would have said, how do you feel about that level of upkeep? You know that this is fake farm, right? No one's living here right now, and it's not going to look like that when we move in, you know, things like that. So I think it's important to have those discussions.
Wow. It sounds like the issue you and your husband have are generally the same ones that me and Michelle have. So it's, good night. I mean, shoot, you know, you're almost difficult to ask follow-up questions on because you are so incredibly thorough in how you, because you're answering like five other follow-up questions, but honestly, I got a whole page full of them. So don't worry. I'm not going to run out of anything to ask.
Yeah.
So from there, okay, I really wanted to spend time on that because we have so many people that are getting into this space and they feel so perplexed and where do I start, whatever. And I think you gave them a pretty good roadmap as far as, you know, where you came from, because so many people are coming from that same place and they're finding themselves into this. And I think some of the critical mistakes they're making right now, well, you already addressed and how to get around those. So talk me through your transition. So you're out there, you're off and running, you've been doing this a while, and then you made some other transitions. When I go to your website, there's a number of things you do out there, whether it's consulting, outreach, I mean, you name it. I mean, you're all over the place. And I got to say, I was thoroughly impressed with you at the East Tennessee Homestead Alliance, because number one, of everybody on that stage, I'd only known one person that was up there. And I'm like, where on earth did she come from, man? I had no idea. I was like, you're blowing my mind with your knowledge and your understanding and your wisdom in a lot of this stuff. And I was like, good night, man. Where on earth did she come from? So you clearly have a lot of wisdom in this space. So, and you disseminate it these days. So talk me through that transition, because where you felt like, I know what I'm doing, I'm out here doing this thing, you made that transition into evangelizing and teaching. So why don't you tell me about that?
Yeah. So after I dug myself out of the knowledge hole that I realized I was in, because, you know, you move into a place and you feel like you've got control of it. And that was certainly not the case. For me, it was like drinking from a fire hose. It was so much learning, but I'm also, like you, an autodidact, right? So always pursuing knowledge for the sake of knowledge and learning. And there is never enough to learn about that which I am doing, especially when it comes to something like farming, ranching, whatever. You know, if you're going to be successful at this, you're going to be just running sheep. You're going to be a parasitologist. You're going to be a butcher. You're going to be, you know, a biosecurity specialist. You're going to know nutrition and hoof care and giving injections and basic veterinary care. And then you're going to be sales and marketing. Then also, you got to learn how to cook it. And then you got to be a midwife too, to help them have their babies and things like that. So there's so broad a spectrum to do something properly when it comes to even just one type of livestock. And since I had decided to focus on livestock, I was trying to get deep and broad at one species at a time. So as I was doing that year over year, I found that more and more of my mental energy and my heart was being drawn into this farming and ranching. And I'm using farming as growing vegetables and ranching for animals, just to kind of set the vernacular straight here. So what I found is that I wanted more time to observe my animals and spend time with them and increase my size of my flocks, increase my productivity, increase the amount of food that I'm producing and giving out to the, you know, to the community. I believe in the law of thirds, which is a third for us, a third for others, and a third to give away. And so that is something that I always tried to follow, and there weren't enough hours in the day. And even with the growing complexity, you know, I didn't take on a new project until I had got the efficiency down to a level where I knew I could take on another layer. And as I got deeper and deeper into the farming, I realized that there was so much more to learn, and this is so meaningful. And then I would go to work, and I would work all day long, and I would drive an hour to work, and I'd have an hour at lunchtime and usually running errands, and then I would drive an hour back. And it was so many hours that I was out there being a weekend warrior. And I realized that at the end of the business day, when I would come home from the office, I had nothing to show for it. And I started to become very aware of the difference between actual production and virtual productivity. And then I started to examine, why am I doing what am I doing? Why am I farming and ranching? Why am I working for the office building? And I realized that I'm doing my office job for the money, and I'm doing the farming stuff because it's meaningful and worthwhile and real and basic and important. And over time, it started to feel, not only did I not have enough hours in the day to dedicate what I wanted to do on the farm, but I didn't have enough mental energy to give my all to both. And I felt like my heart was being pulled in two, but I, for the life of me, could not figure out how to make ends meet enough with the farm in order to get away from my office job. And this was becoming a bigger and bigger problem, and it was eating away at my soul, and I was starting to suffer health-wise. And then a miracle happened, a global pandemic.
You too, huh?
Oh my golly. So now what I used to do in the corporate world was I used to run contact centers. And so we were technical support and informational support for scientists all over the world. And it was very easy to transition to working from home because my people were talking to people all over the planet, and you can talk to people all over the planet from anywhere. And working at home, even while I'm working, and would be standing there looking out of my front window and seeing the way the sheep were moving, the patterns and the behaviors that they were displaying. And I can tell my sheep apart from a distance because I've got some that are like different colors and stuff like that. So it's very easy for me to distinguish between individual animals. That's another tip. Get different colored animals, not just because they're fun, but because you can tell what's going on with individual animals from a distance. So anyway, I could see the way they were watching, and I could write down breeding dates, and I could write down little quick observations, even while I'm on a phone call and I'm paying attention to that phone call and watching my sheep. And I realized how much more I was connecting with the farm. So 2 years of this, I had that hour in, that hour at lunch, and that hour home back. So 3 hours a day. You can do a hell of a lot with 3 hours a day.
Yep.
That's 15 hours a week. Plus of the mental freshness, because I didn't have that fatigue from fighting traffic or having a close call or sitting in traffic or whatever. And what I was able to do with those 15 hours a week is I started a soap and shampoo bar business because I had extra goat's milk. So I started a side bit of business, and that thing was very quickly paying the way for the sheep and the goats and the feed and the everything and the hay. And I thought, well, this is pretty cool. And so after a couple of years of this, I didn't feel like I needed to leave because I was working from home. I was fresh enough. And then I realized that I didn't want to go back, and I probably didn't have to come back, because during that time I was able to shift my thinking And I realized that I had accumulated enough knowledge where I would be able to offer this knowledge to others. I became aware of the homestead tsunami and the demand for this knowledge. And I had accumulated so much over time that I was confident that I could actually offer good value of services and advice and work in that area that I already knew and loved. And so when I had an opportunity to exit my corporate life, I took it. I took it, and it was scary as hell. And I decided, I've got a short runway. I'm going to hit cruising altitude. And I dug in and I put 110% into it, and I was successful. Now, I won't say that I got lucky, because I didn't, but I saw an opportunity. I saw a change. And when something changes, that's an opportunity. And that's a permaculture principle too. When something changes, that's an opportunity. And I took it because I knew what I wanted. And then I also really, I concentrated on what I wanted. I concentrated on envisioning my future. I concentrated on, you know, feeling if I was in the ideal place where I wanted to be, what would that look like? What would that feel like? And not to get all woo, but I feel like I manifested it, and stuff started to come together and things started to fall into place, and I started to meet people and things would happen. And I know that I'm in the place that I'm supposed to be in because of the success that I have now started to have.
So just like, wow, you know, good night, man. The way our lives overlap is truly astonishing, because
71 models, look out.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's crazy because, you know, it was crazy. There was one of two ways people went during that whole pandemic. It was like, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
It was first,
depending on whom you were talking to. For me and Michelle, it was the most productive time of our lives.
Yeah.
I had already gotten her out of the matrix. We had gotten our son out of the matrix. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, okay, we were on the knife's edge. Like, okay, are we ready to make that jump for me? Because, you know, I was still working full time and still farming full time. And of course my sleep was suffering in the process. Mm-hmm. But like you, I mean, it took the decision out of it at that point. I'm like, okay, it's time to get loose or get lost, dude. What are you going to do? Where's your passion? But like you said, like so many of us, and there are so many people out there that are feel like that they're just tied to this job. Like, you know, at our age, people generally think where I am, I am. I'm not going to make any big changes at this point. And most never do. They will never make that brave decision that you made. But record numbers are finding themselves in the position of where they're doing it, whether forced to or whether they see the tide and they're thinking, okay, well, I don't think this current model is sustainable. It's time to try another thing. So as you went off and did this, so as far as your business model and what you did, okay, so you're off and running, you got this goat thing going. Did you take the same tact in terms of your business development, like where you described before, when you got out there on the farm, you started one animal, you became an expert at it. Then you're like, okay, before I add another enterprise to this, I'm going to know what's up. Did you take that same approach to your business, or walk me through that?
I have kept my business intentionally simple. I make soaps, and I can add or change my different varieties. I make shampoo bars, which is just a variety of soap. And I also make certain balms. And that's it. That's all I do. I kept it simple. And I kept it to the size that I can handle as far as inventory management. I kept it to a certain level of profitability where it is worth my time, but not overwhelming me. And I kept it to a location and then online shops so that I knew I could manage it. I'm not on Amazon. If I were to suddenly lose a lot of business or lose a major client, then I would probably put it on Amazon, because that's a different kind of problem. It's a good problem to have, but not the problem that I want, right? So I intentionally did measured, slow, small growth, if that makes sense. So no, that was a choice. That was definitely a choice.
Well, I guess the reason I'm asking is that I know that you also do consulting. I mean, how did that I mean, was that on the heels of doing the other thing? And in which way do you consult? And yeah, I guess, I mean, I'm assuming that didn't start at exactly the same time, or maybe it did. Why don't you tell me how that became overlaid into your current business?
So when I was still working in my corporate job, I started the soap business on the side. Ah. I had always done some selling of, you know, the sheep, the meat, eggs, birds, you know, things like that on the side. That was constant. That had always been coming through. That was always farm income. The goat milk soap was the additional business that I started during the pandemic. So basically my extra time gave me time to start this other business. And then when I quit corporate, I went directly into consulting, but there was no overlap between consulting and then the corporate work.
Gotcha.
So I had to start from scratch. I had to start with my first customer. I had this, and that was what made me so nervous, because I did not have a client base. I didn't have my value propositions nailed down. And one of the things that I did to really help myself get launched is another friend of mine from corporate life. She had exited and become a business coach for women's business coaching. And I spent a decent amount of money with her to sit down and show her my business. And she said, well, here's your plan. And so I consulted with her to help me get started. And then I followed that plan. And that really helped a lot, because it's very easy. I must have spotted a dozen different places where if I hadn't stuck to her plan, I would have made an error, or I would have done something differently. So it's important, and this is something that I've discovered all over, make a plan and stick to it unless you're having a problem. And then if you're having a problem, don't just guess or, you know, freewheel it. Make a new plan and then stick to it, because it's very easy to make an emotional decision in a critical point. It's like training, you know, it's like your former military, you know, you rely on your training. It's the same thing, you know, in a tough situation, you rely on your firearms training, you know, or whatever the case may be. You fall back on that training. Well, that's what your business plan should be for your business. And you should be honing that, and you should be tweaking it, and you should be looking at it, but you have to treat it like a business. If you expect to exit the matrix and make these things pay their own way, and you don't get a day off and you don't get a vacation, because if you're not working, you don't get paid.
Yep.
So it is very different. The other key thing is the mindset, because I really didn't think that I could walk away from a really nice six-figure job and offset that with my own stuff right away. And what I realized is that I did not have a full understanding, otherwise I would have done this years earlier. I did not have a full understanding of how self-employment works from a tax basis, from an expenses basis, and then also from just the way the money moves and works. And the other thing is that goes hand in hand with this is when you're in the business of farming, you're able to do your own work next to your own business. So by feeding yourself, you know, you look at your whole income going down by, you know, X, like maybe it's a $40,000 hit between a salary and what you think you can make in farming. That's not necessarily going to mean a decrease in your standard of living, because when you don't buy it elsewhere, you provide it for yourself through little to no cost. And you got to look at how much does food cost if you're buying it at the grocery store. For a family of four, it's very easy to spend $300 a week at the grocery store these days. So that's $1,200 a month. That's $14,000 a year, right? So it's $14,000 a year. Well, that $14,000, if you got a high salary, that $14,000 is after tax money. So really, you had to make like 20 to 24 before it came out to be 14. So you think, oh my gosh, I lost 40,000 in my income. And you're thinking of it in terms of that's this many thousand a month off that I don't have coming in. And how can I fill that hole? No. Don't look at it that way. Turn it around the other way. If I don't have to spend this, I'm paying myself first. So you have the tax, not even the tax, but you don't have to make that extra money, which puts you in a lower bracket, which decreases your tax responsibility. So we can live a better standard of living on less food. I mean, not less food, on less money by producing our own food and avoiding those other expenses because they become part of the farming expenses.
I couldn't, you know, that is so hard to convey. And I don't know that I've ever heard anybody do a more elegant job of explaining it than you have, because I can't even tell you how many times I've talked to people where I'm like, okay, so let's factor in your commute. There was a guy a while ago, and I use it now, and man, it was this really cool equation that he uses to govern everything he does in his life. And it's really an equation. It's like,
I want that equation.
Yeah, I'll have to get it to you, but it was, this equation, it was like, if anybody asks him to do anything, mm-hmm. he'll say, okay, he'll go through this equation. On the one side of the equation, it's like, okay, how much effort, how much money, how much this, how much of that? Mm-hmm. And then if all of that stuff on the left side of that equation isn't less than the future value that he's going to get out of it, the personal growth that he's going to get out of it, all the other ancillary benefits, if it doesn't exceed that, and no matter how many times I explain it, it's still difficult for a certain segment in this population to get them to understand that, like you said, okay, how much is that commute? What is that costing you, not only in gas, but your mental wherewithal, you know, dealing with traffic? It wears you out just driving.
Yes.
You know, things like that. It's all those other things that people aren't factoring. Like, I just had a couple of guys, of vendors that just left here a little bit ago, and I just basically filled them up in their truck with all this fresh fruit, the peaches and the pears and stuff that just came off these trees. And they're like, man, you just give this stuff away? I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, it's more than I can deal with. I mean, I got more than I could possibly hope for, but these are expenses that no longer come into play. And for some reason, there are so many people that are getting into this space that don't factor this in. I know by far you were smarter than the average bear in all of this stuff, but I'm so glad you pointed that stuff out, because it's not a one for one. You know, it's not a one for one. There's so many other factors you got to figure in there. And for me, one of the biggest ones was, I'm working with a bunch of guys that, I mean, honestly, there were some good ones. But honestly, if it wasn't NASCAR or football, you couldn't have a conversation with these guys about anything. And I would rather just not even have the conversation. And you strike me as a person that isn't given to, you know, simpleton conversation as well. So I would rather be alone in my own space than have a conversation about something that's stupid. So I was thinking, okay, well, that's one less thing I got to worry about. I get to have conversations with my son and my wife, who I know have sense. I mean, those things mean something to me.
Huge.
So even though I'm, like you said, I'm making a lot of money doing what I'm doing, and right now I could jump right back in the game, pick it up, and still make a lot of money. But at the end of the day, it's just, I wake up and I do what I love every day, and I don't think you can put a price on that. Yeah. Let's go into another little thing you're doing, and you're quite good at it. You know why? Because I'm subscribed. You are a podcaster. What made you get into that?
I got into it because I wanted to be able to reach people and showcase others who are doing similar things. One of my first guests was a homesteader, and she and her husband had tried to run a homestead and they failed at it. And it was such a fascinating story to me. And I wanted to tell that story. And I got into podcasting because I was listening to other podcasts, and I found myself wanting a little bit more variety and a little bit more depth and a little bit more insight. And people told me that they enjoyed speaking to me and that I was good at conveying things and that I was a good writer. And so I thought, well, you know, I could try doing a podcast, I suppose. And my business coach at the beginning, her name is Holly Haynes, by the way, plug to Holly, who is never going to hear this podcast, I don't think. But anyway, she helps women entrepreneur get themselves in line and stuff like that. But Holly was really encouraging to me to start a podcast. She said, because what happens is it gets your name out there and it really increases your network, and you will meet some amazing people through being guests on their show and you being and interviewing them that will stimulate your brain so much. It will make you a better communicator, a better networker. It's best not to be the smartest person in the room. So when you're having other people on and you're hearing their ideas, it's stimulating so much. It's just making your entire mental ecosystem so much healthier. And I also like the idea because I'm here on my farm all the time. And this is a way to talk to other people and network and have a conversation. So I decided to give it a try. And I thought, if I'm not good at it, I'll just give it up. And it's not that much. It's not that much expense to get started on the Jeep. Well, what I found out is that I was immediately getting a lot of kudos. And apparently I have a natural talent for it that I didn't know that I had. And so everyone has said, don't you dare stop. And I really enjoy it. So I'm not about to stop. But it's not monetized. It's something that I do, and I'm able to put out usually one a week that I do. But I really enjoy the insightful communications and conversations that I have with people. So it's enjoyment. But I know that other people enjoy it too. So that's why I do it.
Well, having been a guest on this show and being an old hand at the news radio and the talk radio biz, I can tell you, you got the goods, kid. And you're very, very, there are certain things you can't teach, certain things. And honestly, you have a very welcoming voice. I mean, as you hear it, you're thinking, okay, yeah. And you ask great questions, you know, to the point where you got a brother over here crying on your show.
I didn't mean to. Sorry, I had a Barbara Walters moment. Sorry.
No, it's all good. You did great. You did fantastic. Yeah, and I was sitting over here having a Justin Rhodes moment, sitting here bawling. But anyway, I think I had a pretty good reason. Sandy, I'm sorry. You called me Bob. Oh. So I called you Sandy. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, now
sorry, all you people look the same to me. I'm sorry. No, all I'm right.
Just four is 1-1.
No, right. Judith, it's tell me what else is big on your radar right now. I'm gonna have to get bouncing here in a minute. I got a bunch of stuff I gotta knock out, and then plus send you another email that I thought I sent already. Folks, by the way, that Gmail is screwed up, and I'm gonna be working on trying to switch it over. So all you folks that are reaching out to me, I know I get a lot of emails and a lot of people telling me, you know what, I sent this 10 times. Well, I promise you I didn't get it, because I respond to everything. And if I'm not getting it, it's because Gmail's playing games. In fact, I tried to send Judith something yesterday and it didn't make it. So just stay tuned for that. So what else do you have hopping and popping in the fryer up there in Ohio? And what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Well, what I have hopping and popping is I always encourage people to reconnect with where their food comes from and take the time to learn about how it is grown and raised. Vote with your pocketbook when it comes to the food that you want to see on your shelves. And that means probably try to not shop in the grocery store, because if you're a big believer in food freedom, like I am, food freedom dies in a grocery store. When you buy food in the grocery store, you are not helping small local farmers, period. You are not. These big box stores, they are not our friends when it comes to us small producers. And that is not the way to decentralize resilient food supply chain. So I really try to teach people that. It's super, super important. If you want to know what's in your food and how it was raised, and that matters to you, and it should, because there's nothing more basic than what you're feeding your family, what you're putting into your body. Do not shop for meat, especially in the foods, in the big box food, and as little produce as possible. So go to your farmer's market and talk to your farmers and patronize them and make relationships with your small farmers down the road. Go to Eat Wild, find a place around you, subscribe to a CSA, visit a farmer, ask other people, where do you get your food, who are, you know, the earthy crunching types, and make the connections. It's a little extra work, but I assure you it's worth it. And producers the size of Billy and me, we need that kind of interest. We can't always spend all the time advertising and stuff. It doesn't make sense for us. We're not really able to do it. We need you guys to come and find us, because there's 98% of you guys out there and there's 2% of us. So you guys have to start this movement and we will respond. We will produce and grow the stuff that you want. So that's my big thing that I have hopping and popping. I always try to do that. And there showcase regenerative agriculture entrepreneurs who are associated with this type of stuff.
So as far as how people could contact you, obviously, folks, you want to go check out Fair Hill Farmstead Life. Okay, I didn't screw that up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my podcast. Hill
Farm, yeah, it's almost a tongue twister for somebody like me.
Fair Hill Farmstead Life. I'm at Spotify and Amazon, everything. I'm on all the platforms. And you can check out my website, which is fairhillfarm.com.
We'll have everything in the show notes down below. I want to thank you so much for being on, Judith. It was such a surprising joy to share a stage with you and to get to know you a little bit. And it's been a real joy. I can't wait until we can hang out in the same location again. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you too, Billy. This has been such an honor. You are so fun to talk to. And I really love your energy and can't wait to do it again.
Well, that goes double for me. All right, y'all, listen, go check her out, because there aren't a whole lot of folks that are out here doing what we do. And I couldn't say it any better than she did, y'all. Look, we're living in strange times. Things are crazy. And look, you have got to stay alert. Stay alive until next time, y'all. We'll see you. Yeah, I'm talking saucy. All they wanna build is a prison world full of pet Tamagotchis. The kamikaze got me out of body like I'm Goku SS3. They wanna push me to the center like a cell. They wanna split up at the center of the next. It's me. They want me to battle, but I'm a warrior. I will never bow down, 'cause I'm a warrior.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.